Why do good things happen? I didn't plan that, but it fits in. More appropriately, why do bad things happen? Do we have a disaster in our country? We are a first world country with first world responses and abilities beyond any other countries in the world. And 230, I heard, is that what the latest numbers are for losses of life? It's an age-old question. And of course, Jesus answered it point blank. He said, it rains on the righteous and the unrighteous, on the just and the unjust. So good and bad happens to everything. But in the Old Testament, that question was answered. And you can understand how people would go to the temple and say, why do bad things happen? And so the answer is the book of Job. And here is Job, and he is afflicted. And if you haven't read all the way through it, or if it's been a while, he is counseled by everyone, his wife and his three advisors, his friends, his colleagues, and they all tell him, curse God. Certainly God has done this, and God is doing these things to you. And Job remains faithful. Job doesn't curse God until the very end when he asks God that question, why? Why, Lord, have you done this? And you can tell that he is like all of us humans saying, why are these things happening? And there are doubts and there are questions, even when we know God is good. And Job wants to know because he just can't figure it out. So God responds to Job. He says, you can't understand. And he says, quote, where were you when I laid the foundation of the earth? Job wouldn't know anything about that. That's well beyond. How many of us know about laying the foundations of the universe? Creation of all things. Creation of life. Giving of life. And all the things in the air and the sea. All of the things living and breathing. How could that creation have come? How many of us know how all of that works? And yet, we do ask and we want to know. And we want to understand. God says you cannot understand. We just don't have that ability. And he is properly chastised. Job says, I have uttered what I did not understand. Things too wonderful for me, which I did not know. He acknowledges finally, all right, in my arrogance, I thought that I should understand, and you're right, I can't know how you are and how you understand or how things work. And at the end of the book of Job, Job apologizes, returns his faith, and God restores Job's fortunes. But the reality about good and why things good things happen and why bad things happen, we don't know. We can't know entirely. It is beyond our ability to know. It reminded me, I don't know where this memory came from, but I was just a little tyke. It's been a year or two. And my folks, we were in Grand Junction, and there was a newspaper article about someone had seen this optical illusion on the side of a hill. South and east of Grand Junction, there's a hill, the road loops around there, and sagebrush and all this. And you get to just the right spot, and you look up on the hill there, and you can see the perfect shape of a guitar. So we were driving in that area one day, and Dad took us over there and stopped and got out, and we walked back and forth. We found the exact spot, and Mom and Dad pointed up there. Look up there. And it was obvious. I could see it plain as day. And I said, I want to run up and get it. I'm going to crawl up there and bring it back down. I would like to have a guitar. Well, it was one of those optical illusions, you understand. Dad tried to explain that to me. It made no sense. He explained and he went on at length and he turned to me and I said, okay, but let me go get the guitar. And I was insistent, and they wouldn't let me go up the hill and get the guitar, and I was put out for years. I was thinking what a nice guitar that would have been. And it took a long time till I realized what an optical illusion was, and the optical illusion apparently grew and disappeared. It wasn't there very long. Or some young yahoo like me crawled up there trying to get it and destroyed it. But it's some things that we cannot comprehend. We don't know. I do know that when we are hurting, God is there for us. We don't get a busy signal. We don't get a please hold for the next available operator. Your call will be answered in the order it was received. God is with us. And God will help us through our pains. And God will help us as we help others through their pains. So this is an interesting subject that we get to. And some of you are probably asking, okay, that was in Job, so I guess that kind of ties in. But where does spiciness come into it? The title of the sermon is spiciness. That's another term for saltiness. My term, that's the way I'm phrasing it. But you have grief and you have joy. And I contend that we cannot understand one without having experienced the other. Think about that a minute. If you have always had everything and have want of nothing, you might be kind of bored. You might be frustrated, not feel like you had enough excitement in your life. I don't know. I haven't been there. Any of you experienced that? Perfect lives with everything given to us? But I contend that we experience joy when we have known some grief as well. It is that relationship between joy and grief that Jesus is talking about in saltiness. I'll get to that in a second. Look at Job for a moment. Job was wealthy. Do you know how wealthy? We didn't read it this morning. It wasn't in the text that I had. There it goes. It's not in the text that I had Larry read this morning, but here's the summary. He had seven sons and three daughters, 7,000 sheep, 3,000 camels, 500 oxen, 500 donkeys. And I was just thinking, who's going to take care of all of that mess and keep all of that strained out? But he had very many servants. He was wealthy. He was wealthy beyond imagination. He was wealthy beyond most definitions. The term I learned when I was young was he's living high on the hog. Any of you ever heard that phrase? I won't tell you where it comes from. But when you are wealthy and you're blessed, faith is easy. Unfortunately, many of us know what that's like. We are a wealthy, blessed people. Now, sometimes we turn around and we say, well, I don't know, I still owe. I'm on my house and I'm making car payments. And the other day, somebody dinged the door on my car and I got a scrape here and there. And as we're aging, I've discovered there's this thing called I gotta call the doctor again. Can we get my prescriptions renewed? But we are a wealthy, blessed people. Do you know what? It's a miracle, but we have clean drinking water piped right to our houses. Every one of us has clean drinking water. Do you realize what a blessing that is? Do you realize how many places in the world do not have access to clean water? And we take it for granted. There's a joke about we take it for granted, but I can't remember the rest of the joke. We take it for granted, yet we are a blessed people. And you know what else is funny is we read about others who are even more blessed than us, richer, wealthier, more famous. And we read about their travails and how they're not really all that happy. Think about that at the moment when you're reading about some of the celebrities and fans and all that. Many of them die very young of excess. And many of them just are not as happy. They haven't got enough movie jobs. They haven't won enough football games. This house isn't quite big. It's only $18 million mansion, but my neighbor has one that's 30, and so I'm just unhappy about it. And so it is not having things that brings wealth. We know that. And for them, it might be worth them having some grief to help them appreciate their joy. Maybe they ought to spend a month homeless living out of their car to appreciate their homes. Maybe they ought to go hungry a day or two or three. Or like North Carolina, be without water. Water is life. And here they are without, and they're not only struggling and they're in danger, but they're angry. They want to know why they're being ignored. And they aren't, but it feels like it. So the crux of my sermon about spiciness is, it's like salted and unsalted foods. Now, growing up, I always put salt on everything, plenty of salt. And as I got a little older here, now the doctors are saying, cut back on salt. It's something that in this generation, in Job's generation, in Jesus' time, they would have laughed hysterically. Cutting back on it? There isn't enough to have in the world that we need to cut back on it. And yet now, it is plentiful. But have you ever gotten a food that you're used to eating and there's no salt on it? Have you ever had French fries? You go to buy a hamburger and you get French fries and they're unsalted? Try it sometime. It will blow your mind. It is just outrageous how much we take for granted. That saltiness. I might contend that it's not just salt, but spices. Having spiciness in our lives and having spice in our food and having spice in the way we live. Spiciness. In 1990, I was in my last year of seminary, and out of the blue, somehow we ended up taking a mission trip to go help build a school in Haiti. You know I pronounce it Haiti because that's the way they pronounce it. Everybody in our neck of the woods calls it Haiti, but Haiti is the native pronunciation. So we traveled there, and it turns out we landed right in the middle of a revolution. Prosperville was a dictator, and the nation united itself and kicked him out. And they put in a democratically elected person, Jean Aristide. It was amazing. We actually got to sit and interview her, talk with her, spend a couple hours one evening with her. Fabulous time. At any rate, that has nothing to do with the story and where we are, but it gives you some in background that we were in Haiti and we were there. One day we had an opportunity to travel out to the school where we were supposed to be doing our mission work. And on the road, it was lunchtime, so we were on this transport, this van, and they stopped at a roadside vending area there. And we were not allowed to get off and or buy food because they said, you don't know what to buy and what's safe. But the gal that was with us did all of that for us. And they bought and brought us, one of the things they brought were bananas. Now, I've grown up. Any of you ever tasted a banana? It's not a trick question. Have you tasted a banana? Yeah. I had two. They're come, you know, I could take it or leave it. They're bananas. What do you want to know? Fresh off the tree picked ripe banana. I have never tasted anything like that in my life. And now I'm spoiled because every other banana is just as bland can be. Lucy, is that the way it is when you go to Tonga and you get fresh off the tree stuff? Yeah. Boy, I feel sorry for you. That's rough. Just amazing. The difference is beyond your comprehension. Those of us who have never tasted the difference, yeah, maybe that's all right. You don't know what you're missing. But some things have lost their flavor. And now that banana is flavorless. It's like a filler. It just feels like styrofoam. Neil, what do you think a banana in the market today tastes like? Nothing. He's giving me this grin and this look of I'm not going to respond at all. But we have to have that vibrancy, that flavor, that richness. That's what Jesus is calling us to. It's easy to get to a point of just being bland and not having an impact on the world around you and not influencing and inspiring the way Christ inspires us. If salt has lost its saltiness, it's good for nothing but to be thrown out and to be trampled in the mud under pigs. The Lord said, let us be spicy. Let us be spicy. Let us have salt. Let us live enthusiastically. Amen?